out there, everybody at TFMR. Hey, guess what? It's Thursday. And you know what Thursday means. It's time for another Thursday conversation. Again, just to throw off and confuse myself, we're actually recording this on Wednesday, February the 17th. And now you're listening to it on Thursday. But boy, we got to do what we got to do around here, especially given all the craziness that's currently going on. To that end, I thought, who better to track down for a Thursday conversation than our guest this week? I've known Josh Fair for, I don't even know now, 6 or 7 years. Josh and his company, Scottsdale Mint, were the folks that printed the TFMR rounds back in the day. I know some of you still have those. I know I've got some. And so I've known Josh for a number of years. And I know his company is a really big time company in the mint business. And so when I saw last week some mentions of how business has changed in the last, at least just as recently as the last couple of weeks, I thought I got to track down Josh, get his thoughts on what's going on here. So anyway, Josh Fair, CEO of Scottsdale Mint. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for spending a few minutes.
Hey, good to catch up again.
My friend, I think we should probably just dive right in. It has been on both the wholesale and retail side, things have been crazy now for about the last 3 weeks, but it's been crazy before then. Just so everybody gets an idea of Scottsdale Mint and the size and scope of your business, let's start there. Tell everybody a little bit about what you guys do and all the different countries you work with.
Yeah, sure. So we're a full-fledged manufacturer. So we do really everything from beginning to end. We do most of our business is contract manufacturing. We supply about, as you mentioned, we supply, I think it's a little over 20 different foreign governments with legal tender products. We supply private banks, big ones in North America, such as like a TD Bank. So if you were to walk into a bank branch in Toronto, for example, and buy a silver kilo bar, that was made by us in Arizona. We supply a lot of the great dealers that are in the United States, some of the biggest, best names. We supply with both coins, bars. Some of them have our name on them. Some of them have their name on them. A lot of times people don't even know we make it. We supply dealers all over Europe, Japan, Singapore, Australia. I mean, we're moving metals really all over the place. About half our business is overseas. Half is, I'd say North America. We have a jewelry division that, it's not seen to the public yet. We've been delaying that for a bit. It's just been so chaotic really since COVID hit. So we just kind of had to focus all employees, all divisions on maximizing getting ounces out the door. So we've been focused there. And we also do an awful lot of gold. And we've got a few partnerships we mint some of the gold in-house here in Arizona. Some is done in Switzerland. And so we're partnered with a few of the refineries over there. And then, so they do some gold for us out of Switzerland. And in conjunction, we do some silver for them, for their North American customers. So we've got a nice kind of spread of it. And I think, you know, while the core focus of our business is not our website, we do have a website as well. And people buy direct from us as well. So we offer a number of different channels. And so when the market slows down, we see it and where it slows down. And when the market picks up, we see exactly from whom and where and how. And boy, you're right. Just a couple of weeks ago, the world just changed yet again.
Yeah. So Josh, in normal times, you know, in running your business, where do you source your, let's mainly focus on silver. Where do you source your silver so you can fulfill all these orders and make all these blanks and minted products?
Yeah. So let's go back pre-COVID. So let's say one calendar year ago, in a normal situation, the refineries are the, let's say they're the ones that are getting it from the mines, and the mines need to get their cash and continue their operations. So the refineries typically are the ones that deliver to the exchanges. So when they deliver to an exchange, it's basically the spot price minus some fees to ship it there, et cetera. So in a normal world, if they can clip the ticket and maybe get a few more pennies from a user like us, they'll sell it to us. Sometimes they'll ship it to, there's a few large distributors with deep pockets, the guys with, you know, 100 million plus billions. So those could be banks or distributors at that level. They'll sit on that metal and either decide to then turn it into the exchange themselves or try to, like I said, capture that premium. Maybe they capture a few extra pennies per ounce. Doesn't sound like a much, but when you move a truckload of 600,000 ounces, for example, it adds up. So you're talking supplying, you know, companies that are doing, you know, different, making glass, making refrigeration, making jewelry like a Tiffany. You know, silver gets used in so many different things. Well, today, you know, things have changed because, you know, really it happened first was the week of the COVID shutdowns last March. And everyone out there in every industry, they went and secured their metal. So you've got a lot of people on the industrial side who have big, you know, and these guys have more money than they know. A lot of them are publicly traded, General Electric, you know, companies with massive balance sheets, you know, so for them to throw in, you know, several million dollars extra in silver in one shot is no big deal. So they went out and basically secured all that silver, which dried up a lot of the metal from the United States. But what happened is we saw a contango where the metal price was, even though everyone works off the same spot price, there's something called the EFP, the exchange for physical. Uh-huh. So what we saw take place in both the gold and silver market, gold happened first, is that the EFPs expanded out tremendously. And what I mean by that is you could go and buy, you could basically sell forward a contract deliverable to the US COMEX. As long as you could secure the metal in another country, you're getting it for a much cheaper premium. And in gold, it got as much as $30 to $70 an ounce of gold, right, which is why JP Morgan's number one performing division last year, I believe, or at least for one of the quarters that I saw, was gold, was precious metals. Mm-hmm. They were bringing in, you know, so they were shorting in the U.S. market and buying in the London market, for example, and then importing it in about a month or two or so, depending on the month, they were delivering in that physical. So the U.S. market, and this happened in silver as well, where they were running 20, 30, 40 cents an ounce, which, again, going back to what I was saying, our business or people are trying to clip the ticket for a penny or two. That's kind of the norm. So it takes a lot of capital to make peanuts. And now you have a situation where, you know, banks were making a lot of money by moving metal. So a lot of that material moved over from the London market, from the Hong Kong market, and made its way to the US. So I think, and same thing happened with gold. So actually it was kind of a good thing that happened. So a lot of the metal was repositioned, I'd say in the summer. Summer was when a lot of it happened. And a lot of that metal was repositioned into the US COMEX stockpiles. Today, you know, we had the same thing happen to some degree here. So, you know, we had the silver run happen a couple weeks ago, the Wall Street bets, Reddit boards, the Reddit riot, whatever we want to call this. Everyone went out and bought metal at the same time. What did that do? It spooked all the industrials. So all the guys, going back to the names I just suggested, they're going, hey, I need silver to make my widgets. I need to go get it. So they sucked up all the metal along with all the mints, like myself, the US Mint, the other guys that are out there making this product. Everyone's scrambling to get their product. And now we have a similar situation where readily available silver is in a crunch again. There's no silver grain in existence in the United States at this moment. You're probably a bit about, you know, we've secured some that's going to be, but it's next month. The stuff's coming in. We work with a lot of, you know, 1,000-ounce bars. Those are still available, but it's getting tighter. And now, you know, we've seen, and I mentioned in some other interviews last week, you know, we've seen premiums rise year over year, 8 to 10 times that we're having to pay to get metal, what I call is readily available, meaning I can get it in 1 to 2 weeks. So we as a company, we will never sell, we don't sell to our distributors or our customers unless we've secured the metal. So if I have the metal, we're creating a market and allowing people to buy from us. And right now we just are running a delay to turn it into that finished product. So if you're buying, let's say a 10 ounce silver stacker bar, you know, we've secured the metal. Now we just have to process it, make it look pretty, get the stamp on it, get it packed up and get it out to you. So that, that process takes time. It's more than, so right now, if silver bars are probably taking us 2 to 3 weeks to get in house, you know, our production cycle, we're planning out now, you know, 2 to 3 months out. Mostly, basically we've planned out the rest of the first quarter and most of the second quarter. And I think that's the difficult thing that a lot of people are seeing is that, you know, in a traditional market, the U.S. Mint, to make a Silver Eagle, you're probably looking at a minimum of 2 to 3 months, you know, from order date, request a purchase order, securing the U.S. Mint goes to market to bid out the silver. Someone supplies and finances the silver. One of the companies, one of my competitors makes the blanks for the U.S. Mint. And by the time they make the blank, ship it to the U.S. Mint, which is run by the Treasury, they have to strike it. Then that product, once it gets struck, gets returned back to a distributor. Then it goes down to this to a dealer, like an online dealer, for example. So we're talking 2 to 3 months in a good basic average situation.
Yeah.
Now it's even worse. It's even worse. So everything is on allocation. There's not enough product to supply the demand, which is why you're seeing the premiums rise, because there's nothing really to sell. So the premiums that are going up is also meant to slow the acquisition, especially from the consumer level. But it's also kind of proving, you know, the fact that I as a user am paying a high premium over the exchange price shows that there is some dislocation between the paper price, which is a future delivery. Yeah. You know, and it takes a month to 2 months to go get that. Or if you want metal here in the next week or two, you got to pay up. So I think we're showing a little bit of that dislocation between price discovery.
So where will that metal come from, Josh? I mean, if in the past you've taken, you know, delivery the, I guess, conventional route. When you say there's no grain anywhere to be found, I mean, how does, eventually it's got to be replenished. Does it just be replenished by higher price? You know what I'm saying? You find some sellers of existing metal if price goes high enough, or does it all have to just be mined and the whole process with the supply chain and everything else?
So no one really stocks grain because it's not deliverable to an exchange. So most people stock 1,000 ounce bars. So it gives the bank or the wholesaler opportunities to sell it somewhere else. So if they can't find a buyer at a slight premium, they can just send it to the exchange and get their money, if that makes sense. So most product is produced in the bar format. So that's what we're seeing. That's pretty much all that's available at the moment. You know, in traditional sense, probably the majority of the product that we used is it's US based, it's Mexico based, it's Canada based. Well, right now, and I was just looking, these are some of the names of countries that we've been using silver from just over the last, let's say, few weeks, okay? Probably the weirdest one is Kazakhstan. Yes, the guy that's where Borat is from.
Borat,
The country is really like that movie, but Kazakhstan, Russia, Poland, Belgium, Chile, Peru, Mexico, Canada, Thailand, and Hong Kong. I mean, that's just in the last couple of weeks. And these are all from what I would call known sources. I mean, we don't get stuff from conflict countries and nations and bad places. So we have to deal with, you know, companies that are above board and whatnot. But that just shows you that the United States is the focal point of this demand. This is, you know, we're seeing some demand pick up in Europe. We're seeing some in Asia, but not to the level of Americans. I mean, the squeeze is happening here. The premiums are rising here. The demand is here. And it's kind of exciting because that's what we do. We're a manufacturer here, and not a whole lot's made in the U.S. anymore. So, you know, we're kind of proud of that piece, is that, yeah, we are here. These are jobs here in the United States. And boy, I know just the amount of packaging material, shipping, you know, all the jobs that this helps support during a really tough kind of COVID season. And, you know, even at our Christmas party, I spoke to all the families in our company and just said, you know what, thank you guys for this past year. And a lot of you may not even understand what we sell is peace of mind. You know, when we produce silver bars and silver coins and deliver them to consumers, that is their family's wealth. Some people buy and collect for fun. Others are a lot right now. They're buying to secure their family's future. We don't take that lightly. We view it as very important. Thankfully, the government considered us critical last year because of the government contracts and the metals we work with. So we were able to stay open last year while a lot of our competitors around the world, especially in Switzerland, for example, were shut down. So it was good. It was a good time to be in business, but it doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's not stressful. So yeah, that's kind of a broad brush on the situation.
Yeah, sure. All right. So, Josh, I spoke with yesterday a guy in the uranium industry, and I don't know a whole lot about uranium, but it's been picking up lately. So there's some interest in my site, and I wanted to find out more myself. And I was asking about how uranium is priced, and there's not this big hyper leveraged, unallocated, allocated uranium market in the world, right? Yeah. He said most of this is just from producer to, user and, direct and negotiated kind of spot price. Do you think, could this continue enough, what we've seen so far? If this demand on the investment level were to continue to make it hard enough, challenging enough to keep replenishing supply during the regular route. Do you think eventually, could this be leading to that type of thing where you just say, what the heck with it? I'm just going to go find my own deal. I got to get my own silver. I'm going to go contact, whatever mining company and just strike my own deal with them. Could it go that way?
Yeah, it can. And could it, we've seen this happen in some of the smaller markets such as palladium, rhodium.
Yeah.
You've seen those industries completely change. And so there's a published quote unquote paper price that doesn't mean a whole lot. Yeah. So every single day, if you're a user, you need to call up and find out what every provider's bid ask is. And it can be more than $1,000 on rhodium. It could be, so if the published price is 20,000, you might be paying 21 that day. You might. And so absolutely, I think we could see that long-term. It'll take time. Right now, the stockpiles that are in the COMEX, it's still a very powerful position. But let's assume the drawdown of the stockpiles continues, right? Then the power could potentially shift to the users and the mining companies, not necessarily the banks. So right now, the banks kind of control a huge position in the metals. They sit back and they finance the metal. So JP Morgan is not just sitting on the metal doing nothing. They're leasing it. They're trying to make money on it. They're doing, like I said, they're doing these exchange for physicals, and they're playing the arbitrage between London, US, Hong Kong. Yep. So, but if their leverage, meaning their power because of their metals getting pulled out of their system, and it could take months to do this, or it could take a few years, I think it could shift. It could shift the balance of power to those, let's say like the mining companies that says, hey, we own it in the ground. This is kind of how, if you go back in time and study history, Butte, Montana, I think was one of the largest producers of copper in the world. And I think it was the Clark family, who Clark County in Nevada, they basically built, like, Wall Street was really focused around Butte, Montana during that time, because copper was basically part of the Industrial Revolution. And mm-hmm. it became such a critical component that Butte, Montana, which is where it was coming out of, became a focal point. So I think if we were to take a look at a product like silver, not everybody knows how critical silver is and how many products that gets used in it. And I realize in a car like Tesla, it's only like 2 troy ounces, I think, per car. But if you started looking through every cell phone, medical devices, through all types of electronics, solar panels, suddenly you kind of get the idea that this is a very strategic and important metal to develop the new future that's ahead.
Yep.
And without that product, things can't get made. And right now, you know, silver, there's not a lot of substitutes for silver. It's pretty much gold. Gold's a lot more, roughly 70 times the price, depending on the day. And so really silver is undervalued historically. It's right now it's being mined at a rate of about 8 to 1. So 8 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. But if you were to look at, you know, gold does get used in some industry, but most of it is never wasted. It's never lost. It just sits in a vault somewhere. Whereas silver is getting used. Some of it gets recycled, but the majority of it is essentially lost. So over time, I think, you know, this becomes a more strategic metal. And then I think the power could shift, kind of like going back to Butte, Montana years and years ago. Could the silver power shift to the primary silver producers? Could a company like a First Majestic, little even small players like an Impact Silver, and there's a ton of other silver miners, suddenly, instead of becoming kind of this obscure, and I mean obscure, some of these companies are still worth in the billions, but in comparison to, you know, what, you know, if we just looked at the cash value on the balance sheet of Apple, they could buy the entire gold and silver industry. It's
correct.
It's almost, it's really quite small. So maybe the powers that be don't want people to realize how small it is because they need it down. They need the price lower. It's part of their, it's part of their program for the economy. So I think it provides a great opportunity for those that are looking for alternative investments that, you know, could do well in an inflationary situation, could do well with the US dollar issues and spending issues, political uncertainty. We have it all. But you even look at just the commodity side of silver, it's very exciting. Very exciting.
So Josh, I would imagine, you know, there'll be folks listening to this that are interested in silver and have gotten interested in the last couple of weeks. You know, you've seen, you know, you're where the rubber meets the road here. You've seen the actual impact on your business and on the industry. I guess as we wrap up, what does your gut tell you? I mean, where do we go from here? I mean, if investment demand continues, you know, I'm sure you've seen that article from Ronan Manley at Bullion Star about how maybe there's 85% of the silver in London's been spoken for, or whatever that stat was. And that, you know, if they have to continue to find more silver for all the ETFs, including the ones that actually truly own all the silver, like the Sprott ones, and people buying products from you and all the other mints and bullion dealers. Do you think this is just, what's your gut tell you? You think this is doable? I mean, what if investment demand, you know, were to double to 500 million ounces or, you know, whatever, could it have a lasting impact? Could it kind of force business away from the banks and kind of, you know, a deleveraging of the system?
Absolutely. Yeah. Scottsdale Mint, we're in our 13th year. So I've been doing this a while, but even before then I did corporate risk management and insurance related stuff with some of the biggest gold, silver, copper producers in the world. So I worked with the CFOs of, you know, companies with billion-dollar balance sheets, major mines in Africa, Latin America. So I have a lot of experience seeing it. I don't think I've been this excited about the price potential. And, I would say, think like the next decade. Think this decade. Don't think 1 week, 2 weeks. It's not going to, you know, as the crypto guys say, it's not going to moon overnight. You know, I view this as going to be more of a journey. It's going to be wrought with, a few things, just even like the last, you know, actually silver hasn't been too bad this week, but gold's been a little depressed. I wouldn't worry about it long-term. Frankly, I would learn, there's a lot of other things you can invest in to be leery of for the future. And I think it's going to be a journey. And it's not going to be overnight, but it is an exciting time to, you know, build ounces. Maybe not. I realize everyone, you know, you have to look at dollar cost averaging, but really the guys in the crypto world, they look at, you know, how many Satoshis are they stacking? How many, you know, you know, obviously crypto is very fractionalized, but they look at it as just building their units, not so much dollar. They don't look at it in the viewpoint of US dollars. And I think that might take the silver and gold investor to think the same way. As think of it as troy ounces. How many troy ounces are you building for your family for the future? And nibble on dips, you know, sometimes it's going to rip and it's going to go to a whole new level. I think there's exciting times there, but it will be a journey. This is not going to be an overnight success story. It's going to be, you know, give this thing a few years. Let's see what happens. And I think it's probably the most exciting decade ahead. I think our industry is going to look incredibly different in a few years.
Got to keep the pressure on. And like you said, I mean, I remember putting this on Twitter myself 2 weeks ago, you know, if in the short term, we can get enough people to buy and take delivery of physical metal, maybe we can make some interesting things happen. But even if that nothing comes of it, your downside is that now you've got some physical metal, you know, you've got something in your portfolio that's not dollar based, you know, I mean, it's just a win-win situation.
That's right. That's right. And if anything, the last couple of weeks, I think, is waking up the younger generation. Yeah. You know, a lot of people in our industry over the last, let's say, over the past 10 years, they've been people that are nearing retirement, or they're not making new income streams to invest more in precious metals. Now we're seeing the younger generation, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, are coming in. They're rotating out of real estate. They're rotating out of, you know, certain equities. And they're saying, you know what, let's kind of take a position here. And, it, you know, not just defensive, it's also kind of offensive, because, you know, this is, you know, I think there's a really good story here, you know, from an offensive side. So, yeah, I think you're right about that.
Josh, one last thing, ScottsdaleMint.com.
That's one place you can find us. That's right.
And like you said, you won't, if you've got it in stock, if you show it on the webpage, then you've got it, right?
So everything there is now running. It's running a bit of a delay. Now, some items might ship out in 1 week. Some might be, I think we're saying, you know, it could be 15 to 20 business days on a lot. But what we're doing is we're allowing consumers to lock in a price. So we're offering a market. We do have the physical silver here. We just don't have it in the form that you purchase in, but rest assured, have patience. We will get you delivered. We have delivered every single ounce we have ever sold in our 13 years, and we're going to continue to do it. And through all our partnerships all over the world with mining companies, refineries, distributors, we're going to keep that metal flowing and direct to the people.
Yep. You do great work. My friend, it's always good to get caught up with you. And this has been extraordinarily valuable information. It's a brave new world out there. And so it's great to get any kind of stuff we can get to kind of help guide us our way. And you're doing a great job. Josh, thank you so much for your time.
Yep. Thanks, Craig. Talk soon.
Hey, and thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.